All right, y'all. Welcome back to the Fearless Podcast. This is episode 81, and we're still having some technical difficulties, so I'm not getting my intro and outro to record on the file, so we're going to forego that today, but I have a returning guest coming to you today. I got William from the Permaculture Consultant. Hey, William, how you doing, brother?
Pretty good. How are you doing, man?
Good, good. So for those of you that aren't aware, I wanted to have William back on the podcast. He's been doing God's work out there for hurricane relief and for all the families affected and devastated out there. And he's got a lot of boots on the ground intel of what's going on and the agenda and all these different things. So I wanted to have you on maybe so you could fill us in. You know, one major thing that I think is very important is to keep this in the forefront of our minds, because after these massively tragic events, you know, once a week or two goes by, or there's the next shiny object or whatever the distraction is, you know, all of these people that have suffered greatly, it just kind of becomes an afterthought. So one, I thought we could discuss this to keep this fresh in everybody's mind. We could learn how we can help in different things, and then also learn from somebody that's been there and that is actively working there along with your dad. I'm going to have your dad on this week as well to talk about the remediation strategies that are being implemented, because that's important too, with all these other explosions and chemicals flying everywhere. You know, these remediation strategies are good to know, because we're all going to be using potentially using these strategies moving forward, if it's whatever it is, you know, aerosolized high altitude injections or what have you. But Welcome to the Fearless Podcast, William. How you doing today?
Thanks so much for having me on here, man. I appreciate it. And thanks for letting me get the word out on what's actually going on there, because you're 100% right. After a week or two passes on these disasters, everybody forgets about it. And this is like this is going to be a multi-year cleanup and then like rebuilding process out there. Because I mean, it's, unless you've been out there before the event, it's hard to understand how much devastation there actually was, because there's just nothing left in certain areas. It just looks like a freshly washed out mountain ravine type thing, when there used to be whole communities alongside these creeks and these rivers. And then other areas, you can tell how much devastation there was, because there's debris fields everywhere. But yeah, this is going to be then one area that I'm thinking of in particular, it's going to be 4 to 6 months before they get power back on. And we're going into winter, and unlike Texas, they have a real winter up there. And then also in some of these mountain coves and some of these mountain hollers, they get, like, it's not unusual to get a couple feet of snow. Or, and then on just the other side of this mountain holler, you could actually have no snow. I remember when we lived in Mars Hill, it would be common for it to be sunny in Mars Hill and then see people coming down the mountain from Burnsville, completely snow-packed cars.
very, that's crazy.
Yeah, very localized. Yeah, microclimates. Yep. But yeah, the efforts are still going on. There's certain areas of North Carolina that look completely untouched over in the mountain areas. And then like literally right next door, it's complete devastation. And yeah, 4 to 6 months before power gets back on. And they were projecting like 4 to 6 weeks before they have water again. But the water sources that they're pumping from are contaminated. They're heavily contaminated. And it's going to take some time to do that cleanup part as well. So,
and now are the locals at least up to speed on how contaminated the water is and that they shouldn't be drinking it, or
no? So according to all of the official water tests that have gone on, the water is safe to use, which we all know is a complete lie. The locals aren't completely aware of it because they don't really have access to it right now. The only water that they really have access to are the bottles that are being shipped in, and then whatever they can pump from their well, which the wells are typically 400 to 600 feet deep there. So they're fairly deep. So it's going to be a while before they get contaminated. But some of the shallower wells, they're immediately contaminated, but the locals just don't know.
This kind of reminds me of like after 9/11 and Christy Todd Whitman's like, no, everything's great. You know, there's not like cancer causing agents in the air. So you're totally like free to go back, breathe deep and do all the things, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's usually what these regulatory agencies do. So what are you aware of what type of contaminants we're talking about?
Yeah, absolutely. So there's two PVC manufacturing plants that I know of alongside. One is alongside the French Broad River, and the other one is alongside the Nolichucky River. Both of them completely got demolished. There's sections of those plants that are still standing, but all the chemicals and stuff like that are spread. They've been soaking into the ground, and they've washed downstream. Also, there is a nuclear fuels facility off the Nolichucky in Irwin, Tennessee. So they did an official leak test to see if anything got out, and they said nothing got out. But everywhere that people test for radiation, they are finding, basically. And what's odd is that locations upstream from that nuclear fuels facility are testing positive for radiation as well. It's like cesium 238 or something like that. I can't remember the exact number, but the way it was relayed to me was that this was like bomb grade cesium material. And then also barrels from Oak Ridge are washing up, which it's not possible for them to have washed directly from Oak Ridge. So that begs the question, like, okay, are there depository or deposit spots somewhere around here in these mountains?
So, never let a good crisis go to waste. Like, hey, I know where we can offload a bunch of nuclear waste.
Yeah. Or there's even that option. I didn't even think of that. Like, hey, let's hurry up and drop these.
So yeah. is this nuclear waste, or was this just from a nuclear facility?
I'm not, as far as the Oak Ridge barrels, I'm not sure if they were nuclear waste or it could be like dog man limbs or something like that, man. I'm not sure what's in those barrels. But what's odd, what stands out is that they're testing upstream of these nuclear fuels facilities and they're getting radioactive hits. So it's odd. Now, personally, the places that I had my little Geiger counter out there, the places that I tested personally, I never came up like with anything that was like outside of like normal range, but I also wasn't testing close to those radioactive spots because a lot of the work that Tennessee Department of Transportation and the work that North Carolina Department of Transportation are doing, the ones that they're actually doing, is working by those kind of areas. Clear fuels facility locations and also the PVC manufacturing locations. Also, something that stands out is that that area of North Carolina and Tennessee does not have a large illegal immigrant population. But they shipped them in to get this work done. They shipped in because those are the only guys that are working down in the contamination are illegal immigrants, a population that you don't notice if they disappear. And the locals aren't going to be asking questions if Jose over here dies. So that's one thing that stood out. It was like, okay, I knew this area before. There wasn't a large illegal immigrant population, especially in the Department of Transportation. But all of a sudden, everybody who's working in these contaminated areas around the creeks and the rivers, those are the ones, like, they don't speak a lick of English. I tried because I was like, hey, man, I'm trying to run some materials to these people. They're kind of in a hurry. Can you let me by? And then he just like shook his head. Like, I don't know what you just said, dude. Wow. Yeah. So,
yeah. And you know, that's convenient if you're just using disposable, unfortunately, mm-hmm. you know, disposable people that aren't on any type of records or anything. Nobody's going to ask any questions if they get like turbo cancer or drop dead or disappear. Mm-hmm. So you've been out there several times now, spent several weeks out there. Yeah. What did you initially observe right after the aftermath?
So there's quite a few things that stood out. The first thing that stood out was it's odd, but the first thing that a lot of these locals fixed up was their Trump signs. That was the first thing that a lot of them put back up was the Trump signs.
Wow. Was like, priorities.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But the first thing I noticed is that the government was not out there in any capacity for the most part. They were in the cities, like FEMA was in the cities, but they were not in the rural areas that largely got hit more than the cities did. I also noticed that the Tennessee side seemed to be more like the government seemed to be more on the ball than the North Carolina side did. Tennessee, you would see like the Department of Transportation trying to rebuild things on the Tennessee side. On the North Carolina side, it was 100% the locals. And that's mainly what stood out the most when I first got there was like, wow, these locals have gotten together and they've teamed up and they're working together. Had this happened in another location, like there's a guy that moved to Burnsville from Philly, and he and I were both talking like, hey, man, if this had happened in Philly, people would not be working together like that. But a lot of these haulers and stuff, they live in such close proximity, surrounded by basically a wall of mountains. Everybody kind of knows each other. So there wasn't none of that rioting. There was none of the looting. The only looting that was going on was from migrant workers on some of these farms. They were the only ones doing the looting. But yeah, one thing that really stuck out was that the government was not there to help these people, still not there to help these people. And it's 100%, the relief effort is 100% being done by the locals there, private corporation, not corporations, but private, what's it called? Like charity organizations, NGOs. Mm-hmm. Those people are going out there and helping, and then just like random volunteers. That's who's keeping these people in contact with the outside world, rebuilding roads for them and providing them with their day-to-day needs. That's what's going on. Another thing that stuck out was that the government couldn't mobilize anything to bring in any kind of, food, water, fuel, anything like that. But what they did put up overnight were vaccination tents immediately everywhere. You could get a vaccine for whatever you needed or whatever you wanted to almost overnight. And a lot of these locals ran those people out.
Wow. Yeah. Like polio vaccines? I mean, what kind of vaccines were they offering?
Yeah, polio, flu, measles, what else? COVID jab, all that type of stuff. You could get, it was like a full-blown vaccination setup. Like you could get vaccinated.
It's like Gaza. It's like Gaza. Like, hey, let's stop the war so we can vaccinate everybody.
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Yeah, unreal. Those bombs are killing them too fast. Let's slow it down a little bit.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some serious irony going on. Mm-hmm. That's amazing too, that with all the devastation and the inability to move around, they could still drop these mobile units, these mobile vaccination units.
Yeah.
That's some crazy stuff, man.
The only thing that FEMA really did for these rural communities was, and this is, I'm thinking of three different communities whenever I say this, is that they would drop off two inflatable tents and a case of water. And that case of water, the locals never touched. Like, and they also dropped it off in a weird area. They dropped it off like out in the middle of a field and then just left. That's the only thing FEMA did. But whenever FEMA would drop off something like that at a donation point, like a supply point, they would then claim that supply point is theirs. So sure. Whenever me and these two other guys were doing like some recon on this disaster relief center in Jonesboro, Tennessee, we went over there to see what resources was available to the locals. And we met up with the FEMA people that were there. Four DEI hires. Three of them couldn't look up from their smartphones whenever we came over to come talk to them. And they gave us a list of their top donation spots in North Carolina. Number one on the list was 104 Cherry Grove, which was Grindstone Ministries location. And FEMA had no kind of ties with that place. They didn't drop off. They didn't even drop off the inflatable tents or a case of water. They just claimed it as their number one supply point in Tennessee and North Carolina. Yeah.
Unbelievable. Also, just co-opting everything. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then taking claim for whatever is being done by private citizens. And then also, I was asking one of the people there, I was like, hey, this location in Tennessee is closer than the Asheville location. There's only one FEMA disaster relief place in North Carolina. It's in Asheville. Even though North Carolina was hit harder than Tennessee. And I asked him, I was like, hey, some of these people are going to be passing Jonesboro, Tennessee on the way to Asheville because the old route is blocked off. Can they just stop here instead of going to Asheville? Because Jonesboro is about an hour now. Asheville is about a 3.5 hour trip one way. And these people don't really have vehicles anymore. And he didn't know the answer. So he got on the phone with his boss, called his boss up, and then let me know later that, hey, they could stop here, but it's going to be a lot of paperwork. So just send them on to the Asheville location.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, we're the government. We're here to help.
Yeah. Yeah. So that's what's going on out there, man. And I know there's a lot of rumors about like militia and stuff like that. There was from three separate locations, from three separate people that do not have contact with each other. They all said it was the Cajun Army that came in. Now I'm aware of like the Cajun Navy and stuff. Mm-hmm. And I've never really heard of the Cajun Army before, but everybody who had an interaction with the so-called Cajun Army, they weren't good reactions. And the locals largely ran them out pretty quickly. Now, I've also heard theories that wasn't necessarily the Cajun Army, that it was a group of people acting like the Cajun Army.
They all had like Blackwater tattoos or something like that.
Probably, yeah. 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 There was that one viral clip of this helicopter blowing down the supply point in Burnsville.
Yeah.
That supposedly, according to the locals, that was Cajun Army as retaliation for being kicked out of the area. Also, the claim was made that the 82nd Airborne and the 101st got pulled out because of militia activity, but the militia came and got kicked out before the 82nd or the 101st ever showed up.
So, yeah, and how does the Cajun Army get a military-issued aircraft?
That's a good point. I don't know.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. That would be pretty easy to verify or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
I do know that Blackwater has military-issued aircraft.
Yep. Yeah, they do. But yeah, man, there's a lot of sketchy stuff going on out there. The government is not helping at all. A lot of these houses are condemned. They've been condemned by the government, but the government has not told the locals that. So a lot of these people are sinking what resources they have left back into rebuilding their homes, but they're going to get bulldozed here in a couple months.
Like, wow.
Yeah, it's horrible. There's people who, like the cadaver dogs that were out there initially, they're dying. I think like there was one group, like four of the nine dogs had died. Last time I heard, and like the rest were in the process of dying. There's people who are doing these muck outs in the houses. Their black boots are coming out green. There's people that are coming to do the muck outs, like Samaritan's Purse. There were a lot of people from Samaritan's Purse that showed up that were doing some of the really nitty gritty muck outs and stuff. And there were people that would show up one day and they wouldn't come back the next day because they were sick. Even myself, I came away with some like kidney and liver issues. I'm going through a detox right now, so there's nothing like it's nothing irreversible, and we have the answer to it and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, and I wasn't doing any muck outs. I was largely just I started like a give send go. I was largely just handing money to people, bringing them diesel, bringing them food, anything that they needed, I would bring them. It was basically Bear from Bear Independent. He called it, we were what was it, Amazon for the hill people.
So, awesome. That is,
yeah.
Hey, do you think your exposure was airborne? You think it was something you breathed in?
100%. So there's a few different ways. Since that hurricane, it has not rained there since. It may have rained there since I've been gone, but from the rain from the hurricane to when I was there, it had not rained there since. So there's dust getting kicked up everywhere. All these machines are running. Everything's running. There's dust everywhere. And then also, and this reminded me of the burn pits in Iraq. Not that I've been there, but I've had friends that have told me about it. at the bottom of each one of these haulers, the Department of Transportation has set up these big old dumpsters where they're burning debris. Now they're burning it at bottom of the hauler. So everything that they burn, the smoke gets just wafted up through the community. Mm. So the entire community is just constantly burning and breathing in the chemicals or whatever's coming from these burn pits. So yeah, same thing with that Ohio train derailment where they set it on fire and then made it 10 times worse. That's exactly what's going on there right now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Man, that's incredible.
It's definitely airborne. The dust by itself is bad enough, but then they're aerosolizing it and it's through the burning and it's making it 10 times worse. Stuff that wasn't necessarily clean or dirty in a natural state after it gets burned is now affecting everybody who's breathing that in. Yeah, man, it's not good. It's not what's going on out there by any means.
I think one of the most beautiful and fascinating things, as tragic as all of it is to just watch the community come together and other social media people and other people that are well outside of the region all work together and through funding and all of it to do the whole thing without any type of government intervention is a beautiful model, you know, because that's the whole, everybody's argument of like, but what if we didn't have government when it just so happens that they seem to be at the helm of every ill and evil and all the wickedness that actually happens and all the misappropriation of funds and all the, plausible deniability and all these things. And to watch this massive tragedy happen and watch the community come together and then to watch all these different little local churches and all these just different factions of people all come together, work together. That part has been just incredibly encouraging, and it's a tremendous model to show you like, well, yeah, we really don't need government. Like if they would just get out of the way and not jack stuff up, like every time they intervene, it just like in Palestine, when they intervene, it intensifies, it worsens the problem. So that's been very encouraging. What's your whole take on that from a direct experience?
Absolutely. Like anytime the government was involved in any of the relief efforts, it just made it slower, made it more complicated. Or if any organizations that were trying to mimic the bureaucracy of government got involved, it made it slower and more complicated. For example, there's this community called Elk Mills, and it's in Tennessee, and it got hit pretty bad. They had a mud dam up at the top of this holler, and that mud dam broke and then just wiped out everything that was in the way. And like to the point where the river stopped flowing at one point, and people were like, oh, that's not good. And then a mud wall just came and wiped everything out. So there's this organization, and I'm going to call out this organization if it's fine with you.
Yeah, go for it, man.
I'm not doxing anybody. I'm just giving their business information. So there's this organization called International Association of Christian Chaplains. They came out. Yeah. So here's how the story goes. I was at Home Depot and I was picking up electric start generators because there's some elderly people out there that can't pull the cord. And this lady came up to me and she's like, hey, are you taking those to Elk Mills? And I was like, no, I've never heard of it, but tell me about it. And she's like, well, long story short, these people just now got hot meals. And this was about a week and a half ago from today. She's letting me know, is like, yeah, these people are just now getting hot meals. So I was like, okay, I'll go check it out. So I bring the generators back to where I was taking them. And then I meet up with the people over at Grindstone and I say, hey, there's a community called Elk Mills. Let me take a team out there and we can do some recon and figure out what these people need. So I go out there that same day and I meet up with this lady named Tracy Elder, and she's a part of, she's like taking control over the area. She has this massive pull behind generator, right next to this, like almost FEMA trailer. It has like three offices within this trailer. Mm. And I see the generator. I'm like, okay, that's cool. They could probably power this whole community with that generator. Turns out that generator is only heating and cooling this office trailer and providing lights. Yeah. And then right next to both of those, they have a brand new concrete pad poured, which immediately I was like, how did you guys even bring a concrete truck in here? Because like the road I took, I wasn't supposed to, like I could barely fit in an F-350, like barely fit in that. And then right next to it, they had this little shantytown supply point where people could come get in. They only kept 2 days worth of supplies at a time. That was the max that they decided to carry. I have no idea why. It didn't make any sense. So I go over there and I meet up with this lady named Tracy Elder, a part of the International Association of Christian Chaplains. And I'm talking to her and saying, hey, I'm with Grindstone Ministries. Like, here's what we can provide. We can do, we can get access for people. We have heavy equipment. We can get access for people who don't have access. And we have a bunch of arborists with us. We can cut down any like widowmakers, anything hanging above houses, anything like that. And she's like, cool. We have a ton of that that we need done. And I was like, okay, cool. So I go back to Grindstone and she has like a whole stack, a whole portfolio of everybody in the community, what everybody needs, stuff like that. And I go back to Grindstone Ministries headquarters and I say, hey, here's what we could do. Like if we took a team out there, we could spend a week probably just getting everybody fixed up. The next day, take that team out there. We have about like 16 to 20 people, bunch of heavy equipment, saw teams, all that type of stuff. And get back out there and I meet up with Tracy. I'm like, hey, the team is here. Let me go ahead and have those names so we can go ahead and get to work. And because it takes it, if it was just me driving by myself, it would take me an hour and a half to get there. But with every like all these pieces of equipment, it took us about 3.5 hours to get in because they're like they call them two lane roads, but they're just commonly traveled mountain paths that they happen to pave. So, yeah, we had to. That was a whole ordeal. And I go up to her and ask her for the list. And she tells me, before you guys get started on anything, we need you to sign this waiver. And immediately I'm like, that's odd. Like, we already signed a waiver with Grindstone. Like, if you get hurt, you get fired before you get hurt type thing.
Right, right.
Like, if you get hurt, it's not our fault.
Yeah, if you fall, you're fired before you hit the ground. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So I bring this packet of waivers back to the guys and I was like, hey, she wants us to sign this waiver. Something's telling me like, don't give any real information on this waiver. And then like, as I'm saying this, there's three guys that are just shaking their head. No, like, no, we're not signing it. So then we start looking at the waiver and the last paragraph of the waiver is basically saying like, you agree to do whatever rules, laws, mandates, anything like that, that comes out by the IACC for the rest of your life, basically. And we start looking at that and we're like, nah, we're not signing this thing. And I should also say before this, the day before, I warned everybody and was like, hey, this lady has a massive ego. Like, we're just going to have to like kind of deal with it so we can go ahead and help these people. As we decide none of us are signing this waiver, she comes over, starts clapping her hands like, all right, I need my waivers. I need my waivers. And I was like, well, we just decided we're not going to sign any of these waivers, but we're still going to help the people here. Like the list of the recon list would be nice to have if you'd cooperate with us. And she just loses it. Like she can't comprehend the fact that we won't sign these these waivers. She won't talk about anything else. She won't discuss anything else other than signing these waivers. And I'm like, you can't stop us from helping people. And like as far as like lists of organizations in that area that have permission, Grindstone is way up here and you are barely allowed in type thing. Like Grindstone is on the same level as the Red Cross. Like they can go to war zones if they wanted to. But so she goes whining back to her trailer. Side note, her husband is a cuck. If anybody were to talk to my wife,
she's married to a dude.
Yeah, yeah, kind of. He might be married to a dude. But if anybody would have talked to my wife the way I was talking to her in my present, like if anybody's arguing with my wife in front of me, no, they're not. Not anymore.
Yeah, sure. Yeah.
Exactly. Anyway, yeah, that just stuck out to me. I'm like, this dude is just going to sit here quietly and be a chauffeur.
Wow.
But yeah, and I wasn't disrespectful to her. I was just very direct with her. Like, we're not signing these waivers. So you can stop talking now. Like, we're going to get to work. So she goes back to the trailer and then she calls the sheriff on us. And the sheriff comes over to us, meets us, and then like falls in love with us. She's from New Hampshire and she's like, hey, you guys are cool. I don't understand half of y'all, but you guys are cool. And then she's like, all right, let me see if I can work something out so you guys can get this recon list. So she goes back to Tracy and she's like, hey, these people are here to work. They're good guys. They're not here to do anything bad. Like, it'd be nice if you could get the recon list. And Tracy just keeps going off and off about us not signing these waivers. And then the sheriff goes to the state trooper that's over this little community. And he's like, yeah, they can totally be here. I know who they are. They're cool people. They can totally be here. She can't kick them out. She has no jurisdiction over this area. The sheriff comes back and tells us this and was like, hey, the lady cussed me out. I'm going to help you guys try to do some recon and all that type of stuff. So as we're doing recon, the community was pretty wiped out. But as we're doing recon, we're also realizing that Tracy Elder Lady is way over exaggerating about how bad the disaster zone really is there. A lot of the people that needed help had already gotten help from the local community. Also, we find out that all of the volunteers that were coming in to help this area, the reason this area is so far delayed is because that Tracy Elder Lady keeps running people off with this stupid waiver that she wants people to sign. Like, nobody's wanting to sign this waiver. So, or deal with her ego. So we meet the unofficial mayor of the area. He owns the general store up at the top of the mountain, and he's been supplying everybody with everything. If they needed fuel, he got it. If he needed gas, he's got it. Anything, food, anything like that, he's got it. And his wife let us know that, yeah, the community's been trying to run her out since she showed up because everybody's tired of her being around and stopping the help from coming. So what they've been doing is letting the air out of all their tires. They've been siphoning off kerosene and diesel at night, and they've just been like basically looting the place.
Like, that is awesome.
Trying to get this lady to leave, and she's not taking the hint. So we end up doing what we can. We end up tightening up the place in like a day, basically. And then we come back to headquarters, and Kyle, the guy who's in charge of Grindstone at that moment, he lets me know that Tracy was trying to bill for our labor, bill to the government for our labor so that IACC could get a kickback from it. Mm-hmm. And I realized this later that the whole reason she's exaggerating about this whole area is because she has her own little fiefdom and she has her own little minions that she has control over. So she's exaggerating about how bad it is. So it extends how long she's actually there. This woman poured a concrete pad. Like, she plans to be there for a minute. Yeah.
Wild.
So, yeah. Any government agencies or any agencies that are acting as if they are the government just end up slowing everything down and making things way more difficult. So we wasted like 1.5, almost 2 days where we could be actually helping people that needed help, just dealing with stupid bureaucracy.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, in totality, how long were you out there altogether?
Total, maybe 3.5 weeks total. But it was split up at one point because I had to come back and get the truck worked on. And then I went back out there. I had to pick up the wife and baby and stuff like that. But I think 3.5 weeks total is how long I was out there. And then I'm actually going to be going back out there here pretty soon. I wanted to wait out the election, see if anything happened during that and stuff like that. But I want to go back out there and get a greenhouse built for this particular community. It's going to be like 6 months before they get power. The greenhouse isn't to grow food. It's actually to speed up the drying process on this firewood. Because all the firewood we split out there, like you'd throw a maul at the wood and it would like splatter on you. Like it was just saturated. So
what type of greenhouse you planning on putting up out there?
Whatever company will work with me.
You should talk to Bootstrap Farmer in Paris.
Paris, Texas?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I know those guys. They're really cool.
Okay.
So maybe I can get you in contact with them. And because their setup is, you know, all DIY and it's relatively inexpensive. So,
Cool. I have funding so we can. Like, I don't know if they want to work out some sort of deal with me, but yeah.
I'm sure they will. Okay. Yeah, I'm sure they will.
Cool. And I'll shout them out in a video too.
Great. Yeah, yeah. That sounds great. That's awesome.
That's awesome.
What size greenhouse are you thinking about?
I honestly don't know. I was going to like kind of like, you're not going to have one that's too big. The area where I was going to put it up was going to be, it's a pretty large flat area. It's down by the river, but it's where all the firewood is right now. Another note is that we rented a firewood machine, one of those ones that'll like chop the log, it'll split the log, and then it'll send it on the conveyor belt.
Yeah.
Which works with clean wood, but if the wood has been covered in silt and sand, it clogs up like crazy. So splitting it by hand was actually faster at one point.
Was that the Axios? Was that the Axios?
I don't know what brand it was. It was a blue and yellow.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's a pretty cool, cool machine, but it doesn't like it if the wood's dirty. So.
Nope. That bar kept getting like wallowed out. The chains would just like, you'd get two or three cuts in and then the chain would just dull because it's covered in, and no shame on the machine. It's just not used to dealing with wood that's covered in like mud. So,
yeah. Wow. Yeah. So you're planning on heading back out there to do a greenhouse, mm-hmm. Projection wise, have you been in contact with any groups working out there that have like long-term projections as far as them being involved and whatnot?
Yeah, there are like local, I don't know that they have official group names, but there are some people that are just going to stay out there and keep organizing labor, until these people get to a stable point. There's certain communities that are way like worse off than others, obviously. The main priority is getting these people into like some place that's going to be dry and warm and keep them out of the weather and stuff like that. Yeah. And then I think people will probably start leaving at some point. There were a lot of people there that came to just get people access. There are a lot of people there that came specifically to cut down widowmakers. I would say largely those two things have been accomplished. Like, there's no more widowmakers by the houses, and everybody who wants it has access. So there are some people at the tops of these hollers who will shoot at you if you keep walking up there. There's this one road named Cattail. It's off Pensacola Road in Burnsville. Like, anytime you enter Cattail, there's a warning. Somebody will warn you as you go up it, like, hey, once you start hitting any kind of grade, just go ahead and stop, because they've been sending off warning shots. So,
wow.
But the locals have also said, like, those people aren't a part of the community. They're not even local to this area. We don't know what their deal is. So,
wild.
Yeah. Yeah, it's wild, man.
Has anybody, you know, one thing that a lot of people don't think about when people's domiciles get annihilated is that not only do they not have any things anymore and they don't have a place to stay, but it's also probably prohibiting them from going to work. So only have they lost all their worldly possessions, they're not like, well, I'll just get up and go to work, and when I get home this afternoon, I'll worry about it.
Yeah.
Are most of these outplaced people like not just outplaced, but like can't go to work?
Yeah, there's a large population of that. And that's where a lot of the funding that I've received through the Gifts and Go has been going. The number one things that I've been getting is like diesel, and then just handing out cash so people can keep on like living, basically.
Yeah.
And I'm handing it out to like when the spirit calls for it. Like, it's mm-hmm. not just like, hey, here's a heroin addict. It seems like a good idea to give him cash or anything like right, that. Right. Like there's one guy in Pensacola. He's the unofficial mayor of that area. Before fixing anything of his own, he's been helping everybody else. Even though his house was completely hit by the flood, he didn't even think about it. He just thought immediately of his old time neighbors. So I know giving him cash directly, it's going to go to the correct, like, he knows best how to use that cash to help his community.
Sure.
It's not going to any, like, it's not going to the Red Cross or anything like that.
Right. Of course.
But yeah, a lot of people, a lot of people haven't even received that $750 loan.
Right.
Like literally the only lifeline they have to the outside or from the outside world is like private benefactors.
They, well, it, the check's in the mail. They sent it to their mailbox.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, their mailbox isn't there anymore.
Yeah, the mailbox.
I wonder why they didn't get it.
It's under 6 feet of mud.
Oh, man. That's so wild. I mean, you got to laugh or you'll cry. That's how insane it is.
Yeah.
And it'll be real interesting to see with this administration change. This would be a great illustration of like actually getting stuff done and blah, blah, hopefully, blah, and change and all that stuff. So it'll be interesting to see how prioritized this is. Maybe we can redirect some Lebanon aid to the area or whatever and help real people with real problems.
I saw a tweet. It said it was like some governor or senator or something like that saying 157 was like 157 million being sent to Lebanon, and somebody commented underneath that is like, what part of North Carolina is that?
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but they know, the current or the soon to be administration knows exactly how bad it is out there because Donald Trump Jr. visited Pensacola by itself 3 separate times. So
interesting. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So maybe something good will happen. Did you, now the areas of devastation were basically North Carolina, East Tennessee, and Georgia. Did you notice local response? When I say local response, like state response, did you notice any difference in state response between North Carolina, Tennessee, and Georgia?
So I haven't been to the Georgia devastation at all. As far as I know, it was less affected than Tennessee and North Carolina. But there is a big difference between Tennessee and North Carolina. Tennessee, it looks like they're actually trying to help their people as much as possible. Like some of the supply points are being supplied by the government. Some of the supply points are like they're bringing in materials and stuff like that. There's at least, very least, a presence. In North Carolina, it like you could get away with whatever you wanted to in some of these communities, and that like there is no government presence in some of these rural communities. The only government presence there is like in the town, in the actual town square of Burnsville, in the actual city of Asheville, and then the actual city of, well, loose term city, but Marshall, like not extending out to the rural parts of those towns, but like in the dead center city part of it. And then also there's National Guard out there. Like, so the 82nd Airborne and the 101st were out there for a brief period of time. They're largely working on, well, the 82nd, they were out there to cut down trees, but they didn't bring any saws with them and they didn't bring any rigging stuff with them. They had to borrow a saw when they got there. And I'm not blaming the guys in the 82nd. They were largely frustrated. It was their orders that they were given. They were just sitting around eating MREs, just waiting for something to happen. 101st, they're driving around like dump trucks mostly. And then like the National Guard is around, but they're really only in the city areas. They're not in the rural areas. And a lot of them are just driving around equipment. Which is helpful. I don't mean to like disregard that. It is helpful, but there's a lot more that could be done for sure. But Tennessee, I've noticed, is trying to help its population more than North Carolina is trying to help for sure. Yeah.
That's interesting, especially since their administrations are different colors. And when I say different colors, I'm not referring to their ethnicity. I'm referring to their affiliations.
Yep. Yeah. The governor of Asheville or the mayor of Asheville, they couldn't find for like a week after the disaster. He was hiding.
Nice.
Yeah.
Wow. That sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah.
He was hiding behind his wife.
Yeah. He probably was. Yeah. It's insane, man. Like, and it's hard for people, like I was saying before, it's hard for people to not understand how much like destruction there actually was if you didn't see the before. Like, there are whole communities that just don't exist anymore. Like, okay, the official death toll is like 218, they've officially used 10,000 over 10,000 body bags. Like, a lot of the bodies that got caught up in the flooding and stuff are not recovered. Like, there's whole fields where the cadaver dogs were hitting. So one of the times on a recon team, there's a guy who was a part of the initial search and rescue. He was our comms guy. And he was everywhere we went, he was pointing out fields. He's like, yeah, that field's covered in bodies. That field's covered in bodies, but it's all below the silt. It's all like feet deep. And they're like, okay, these people have to be dead by now. Like, we can either take time and effort and put it into recovering these bodies, or we can go help people that we could potentially still save.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. But everywhere the cadaver dogs went, there were hits like crazy. Like, the dog wouldn't even, it got to a point where this one dog wouldn't even like go to a specific location. It would just sit. Like, you'd let it out in a field and it would just sit
everywhere.
And you'd move it again and it would just sit. Not because the dog's broken or anything, but just because it's like everywhere.
Man. Have there been any, that's a really great question. Have there been any updates on like the death toll?
Nope.
Not officially. Yeah, I keep hearing like less than 200 people.
I know one community where 200 people died by itself.
Mm.
Like, there was this lady that was the lone survivor in this community. There's another lady who was a lone survivor in the community, and she had 12 people in her house with her, and she was the only survivor. Yeah.
It's bad enough to lose all your personal possessions and then to lose everybody you love at the same time. That's like hard to, you know, that's like Job status. I mean, that's literally.
Yeah.
Like, that is unbelievable.
And the death toll is still continuing because there are some people who are just tired of fighting at this point.
Sure.
Like, there's the death toll is still going on because some people are just giving up and they're like, okay, I lost everybody. I lost everything. I'm just going to go ahead and end this now.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, one thing I definitely want to do, for your fundraising, give me the link to your GiveSendGo. I'll make sure that that's in the show notes. And then anybody looking to help out. And obviously, we are all praying. I continue to pray for these people. And then obviously also for everybody that's helping. It's very inspiring and encouraging. And you know, and this is the stuff we talk a lot about: parallel economy, parallel community, parallel society. And this is parallel community in action. Yeah. Like, and it was spontaneous, unorganized, you know, and everywhere the government intervened, it was just to bureaucratically waylay, stifle, disorient, confuse. And so that's just a whole nother level of just crap that you shouldn't even have to deal with.
Yeah.
And
it's already difficult enough.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And just the massive loss of life and just a total disregard, really, like it never even happened. And I mean, you don't hear anything about it now. I'm sure if you're local, you know, it's in front of your face. From a national standpoint, you know, especially after this whole election dog and pony thing that happened, it's just like, wow, just like sparkling objects and all this stuff. But but it's great to hear about the work that's being done. And Grindstone Ministries just really seems like an unbelievable organization that just kind of puts ourselves in harm's way to just get the good stuff done. And that's very encouraging to hear about.
Well, they're also connected. So Grindstone is not unfamiliar with putting themselves in harm's way. So they have a sister company called Caleb House. And Caleb House is the organization that goes and saves kids from trafficking and provides them with a permanent home. They don't put them in the garbage foster care or anything like that and just return them back to the cycle. It's same person who owns Grindstone. is the same person that owns Caleb House, and that's TJ from Bear Independent. Yeah.
Wow, he's an awesome guy.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Are now on a personal note, and you don't have to comment, are you at least compensated? Because I mean, you got a wife and kids, and you're doing, are you at least compensated so that way that you can afford to do this?
So thankfully my job is, I do permaculture consultations and stuff like that, so pretty flexible as far as the schedule goes.
Sure.
But there have also been people that have like said, hey, this is specifically for you.
Awesome.
This is so you can continue doing what it is you need to do.
Great.
And also I've like accepted the fact that I might have to get a job, like not that I don't have a job, but I might have to go get like a 9-to-5 after this for a little bit. And I'm
sure I'm just to recover. Sure. Yeah. Sure.
Yeah, for sure. And I'm perfectly fine with that. It's we're being taken care of for sure.
Yeah. That's awesome. Well, that God does that, you know, yeah. God cares for his people. And yeah, man, I appreciate you taking the time. In closing, is there anything else that you want to discuss or draw attention to or anything in closing, William?
So the main, like as far as everybody's preparedness, like an actionable step they can take right now to get themselves prepared for any disaster event like this is that if these people did not have community, the death toll would be way higher. I would for sure put an emphasis on community as well as long distance communications as well. There were also other communities that only got supplies and got help because they had a ham radio operator around with a generator, like Little Germany. The only reason anybody really even knew about them is because there was a ham operator out there who was able to organize some supplies being dropped. There was one way in and out of the community and it got wiped out. Crossing the river, fast moving water too. Build that community, get some long distance communication. And this also kind of put a stamp on like prepare for your neighbor as well, because your neighbor's house might get wiped out. Those were three things that I like, and it's adjusted my preparedness mindset. Focus more on community. Long-term communication or long-distance communications, and prepare for your neighbor, because you don't know what kind of disaster you're going to go up against.
And we all kind of experience that, you know, when you have an extended power outage or something, you know, and it tests your preps. You're like, well, you know what? I really didn't have enough fuel that time.
Nobody did. Nobody had enough fuel. Yeah.
And that speaks to community, right? Because really, nobody is self-sufficient. Nobody is self-sustaining. We need community. We need to work together to sustain each other. And obviously, you know, when you say that, the cyber Pharisees will be like, well, God, you know, and of course God grants life and God blesses, but He also expects us to do stuff. And, you know, loving your neighbor. I mean, the whole entire concept of loving your neighbor is community and caring for your neighbor and helping your neighbor. Hey, you know how you can start? Find out your neighbor's name. Because in a lot of places, like, I don't even know who that dude is. You know what I mean? And if you want to build from a tragedy, it's obviously to learn from it, right? And then to be more prepared for it if it happens to you, to help those that it does happen to, and to educate, create awareness, and then from this tragedy, there can be these different silver linings of here was the blessing in this, here was the blessing in that, and I just think it's awesome. I'm very happy that I can call you my friend, and it's just killer seeing what you're doing, and you got that new little baby, and you're just being a real world testimony in action. And, we appreciate you, brother.
Thank you so much, man.
What you're doing. The Give, Send, Go will be down below. And hey, if you just want to help William out to grease the skids, I mean, this guy's the real deal. I've met William in real life and we hang out, and he's the real deal. His dad's the real deal. And these are just absolutely awesome people. They're selfless. They're not looking for any type of pat on the back or anything like that. And they believe what they say, and they say what they believe. And it's very encouraging to me. And I'm very pleased that I can call you my friend. And we will continue to pray. And I just want to get this word out. I want to keep this in front of everybody's, the front of everybody's mind, to pray for and to help this very extended process. This is going to be a long, drawn out process. And hopefully, if things are moving in a better direction, hopefully this will help accelerate the whole process and bring more attention and funding and whatnot to it. But yeah, I really appreciate your time, William. I appreciate everything that you're doing. And with that, y'all, in closing, remember, stay fearless, my friends.
Thanks so much for having me on, man.
Thanks, brother.